Welcome to the Tashkent International School Podcast. I am the host, Bill Kralovic, the school director. And on this podcast, we talk with community members, students, parents, and teachers, outside experts, all things that deal with education and all things TIS. I hope you enjoy. All right, Hoji, you, first of all, it's an honor to have you, and you are my very first guest. This is the inaugural podcast of TIS, and I chose you for a couple reasons. Number one is that you're a technical expert when it comes to all the sound in that, so it's a great person to test out our system with, and I know you always help me with all the technical aspects here at the school when it comes to internet and things like this. And then second of all, you're a pretty interesting guy. You have a lot of knowledge about how things are going here in Uzbekistan. So thank you for joining me today on our very first podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
All right. So, you know, when people come here to Uzbekistan, and, you know, that's the first thing that the new teachers, when they come off the plane, what's the internet like? I need to get hooked up to the internet. I need my mobile phone. So can you talk a little bit about the internet here at TIS and then in the city of Tashkent, the speed, the companies, all that, cost?
Yes, of course. Internet used to be pretty bad before, like I would say 10 years ago. Like when I started working at TIS, in 2011, whole school had like a 4 megabits per second internet. Mm-hmm. And even at that time, we had like at any given time, there used to be like 100 devices could connect to the internet. And it was so expensive, unbelievable. Like for that 4 megabits, school used to pay $5,000.
A month?
A month. Woo! Now it's changed.
Yeah.
Now internet is like much, much faster, cheaper, and Uzbekistan is developing and it's opening up with the new president, and I would say internet is becoming like a crucial line for the economy.
Yeah.
And that's why government is investing a lot of money, and the speed within the last 3 years increased, I would say, like at least 5 times, and the prices went down like 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. Within the last 3 years.
So the speed here at school is what now? How many megabytes per second?
At school, we have total 250 megabits per second.
Mm-hmm.
So our main line is from UzOnline.
Yeah.
And it is 200 megabits. And then we have also a backup line, 50 megabits per second from East Telecom.
So it went from 4 megabytes 10 years ago to now 200.
Exactly.
Oof. I'm not going to ask you how much we pay. I don't want to know.
No, it's much, much cheaper now.
Oh, okay. And so, all right. So, you know, what are some of the companies, you know, what are some of the main companies here that are the internet providers? Like, which ones are the reliable?
The main
companies?
Internet company is a national one called UzOnline. It is the internet company of the Uzbek Telecom. And basically, the Uzbek Telecom controls the all incoming and outgoing lines from Uzbekistan for the internet traffic. And all other providers rent or lease the line from Uzbek Telecom.
Mm-hmm. So, and so is that owned by the government?
Yes. Uzbek okay. Telecom is a national company owned by government.
All right.
And another, so we have a couple big players. One of them is TPS. TPS is a commercial company, private, and the main stakeholder is the Korean Telecom. And also we have a Sarkar, it's a local company. And then another one, the recent one that emerged, and it's really developing year by year, it's a Turan Telecom. And if you compare the to other ones, Turan Telecom is really winning the customers by a really good service.
And the name of that company, Turan?
Turan.
T-U-R-R-O-N?
Yes,
okay.
Turan. And If I talk about the average speeds in Uzbekistan, right now, according to speedtest.net, Uzbekistan has an average speed of 30 megabits per second mm-hmm. per household. And if you compare it to United States or Europe, so for example, in United States, average speed is per household is like 100 megabits per second. In Europe, approximately the same, 105 megabits per second. So not bad. Uzbekistan right. speed 30 megabits per second per household. Not bad. Also, the mobile internet is also getting better.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be pretty bad before. Like I remember, like 5 years ago, it used to be like the connection itself used to be really spotty. Now we have a more stable 4G connection throughout Tashkent. And also like Beeline USL also like they're saying that they're implementing 5G as well.
Yeah.
So at this point you can easily get on the mobile like 20, 30 megabits per second connection easily.
Yeah, so I think mine is the Beeline on my phone. Yeah. Sometimes it says LTE on it and sometimes it says 3G on it.
So LTE is like in between the 3G and 4G. So some people say that LTE is like 4G, but it's not like real 4G, but doesn't quite meet the 4G speeds, but still it's much, much better than the 3G.
Okay.
So it's the, I think the, some of the, especially iPhones, like, I don't know which generation, SEs, or they had the, like the, basically, they developed their own, some of the technology that didn't quite met the 4G technology. That's why it shows LTE instead of 4G.
Yeah.
But still, it's pretty good speed. And most of the phones, right now, they have 4G. And with the 4G speed, you can get up to 50 megabits per second.
Yeah, so I've been pretty happy with mine. I brought my phone from the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I bought it right before I got here. Went, and I got it, you know, my network is Beeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been pretty good. You know, and then it seems like, depending on where you are in the city, you know, I'm just talking about your home internet now. Where you are in the city kind of depends on where the company you go to, because you got to have the fiber optic cable, right? How does that work?
Yeah. Basically, the fiber, previously, because the infrastructure hasn't developed, like within the neighborhoods, most people were used to use the ADSL line. Like ADSL modem internet. Now the providers are switching to fiber optic. And one of the main reasons that the fiber optic is not available in the neighborhood is that the price.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why what's happening right now is like the providers are dividing the neighborhoods among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's against the, like, the competition, but still,
so they all because got their of territory.
The, like, yeah, they got their territories, and then the, that's why, but it, what helps with this decision is that it helps the coverage, you know? Yeah. If everyone, like, puts the money in one region, the other places, yeah. like, they don't get the lines, and that's what's happening in Tashkent. For example, in one of the neighborhoods, like Rakat Mahalla, there's only two providers. I would say in Rakat Mahalla, there is a East Telecom and Sarkar.
Where is the Rakat Mahalla?
Rakat Mahalla is the, I think, around the next mall.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They have only like two providers, Sarkar and East Telecom. Uz Online maybe still is getting. Mm-hmm. So as you see, like there's no Turan Telecom. Turan Telecom mostly in apartment buildings.
Yeah.
So.
And then, so I live in a house. I live pretty close to the uh-huh. school. And, you know, we got four iPhones. My family loves Netflix. You know, they got every, you know, I need the super deluxe gold package internet. So approximately how much am I going to pay for the top of the top internet service? And what do you recommend? What kind of package should I get?
Yeah. In your case, I would definitely recommend at least 50 megabits.
Mm-hmm.
And the 50 megabits will cost you around, like, I would say, 300,000-400,000 soons.
That's about $25-$30.
Yeah, which is not bad.
No.
Yeah. which is not bad. It's very comparable to Europe or United States.
Yeah.
And it's unlimited. And at even some points, you will get like even 100 megabit. So especially in your neighborhood, probably you have TPS.
Yeah.
And TPS has packages like they say from midnight to noon, you will have 100 megabit per second, and then from noon till midnight, you will have the package you are buying. Like in your case, it's probably 50 megabit per second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they have these kind of like special packages with the two speeds.
Yeah.
So the low traffic times, you will have higher speed, and then during the evening times, the higher traffic times, you will have lower speed.
Okay.
But that's the minimum. That's why the package called like 50 megabit, and this is the minimum guaranteed 50 megabit.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, one of the things that I have on all of my devices is a VPN, a virtual private network. And I know that some of the social media sites, like Twitter and Instagram, are blocked here in Uzbekistan. And without that VPN, I wouldn't be able to reach them. So why does the government, or whoever's in charge of internet here, why do they block some sites?
Yes, that's very unfortunate that some of the websites are blocked here in Uzbekistan, because especially with the internet economy booming these days, blocking is not the right move. So I think one of the reasons the government blocked those websites is the privacy law that was implemented last year. And according to that law, any company or any website that's collecting personal information need to store the servers within the Uzbekistan, within the territory of Uzbekistan. But right now, the rule is implemented selectively. Only currently, like, Twitter is blocked, Skype is blocked, and TikTok is blocked, and WeChat as well. But Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, they're open.
Okay.
Yeah, Instagram is not blocked yet.
Okay.
It was blocked for a day, like a month ago, but I think it's at some point they decided like not to block it.
All right. So it sounds like it's not, because what I was originally thinking was that the government was trying to squash freedoms and the right to express yourself and get information, but it's basically trying to protect the citizens of their privacy.
Yes, yes. I think that's the idea. But the problem with this data privacy law is that our infrastructure is not ready to host or to get those companies to bring their service into Uzbekistan. And that's one of the issues, you know. And for those big companies, Uzbekistan doesn't generate enough traffic to be like a worth for their investment to bring their service. And that's what's happening right now. And I understand the idea behind it, but in our days, especially internet is almost in every in every process, internet is becoming like a vital.
Oh,
like economy, education, medicine.
Yeah.
Even in like our school, like if the internet stops one day, I would say like lots of process will stop. Education will not stop, but it's gonna be like big issue for teachers. Because the Gmail are like, I would say 90% of our data is in the cloud.
And you know, we were just having a tabletop exercise with some of the regional security officers from the embassies today.
Uh-huh.
And we were planning for an earthquake. And we were just talking, well, what if, you know, the cell phone network or the internet goes down? How are we going to communicate with families?
Yes.
And it's just, you know, you're so reliant on these things, you know, so just that kind of thinking about that.
Yeah, I agree, because like always I think like when I have my phone, how did I did like 5 years ago or 10 years ago? Like how did I find that place, or how did I keep communicating with my like friends or parents, family?
Oh, I don't even want to look at my usage. You know, and I'm always on my kids about, oh, you spend too much time on that phone. But I am just as bad as them. You know, and speaking of students, you know, a lot of parents, including myself, worry about how much they're online and what they're viewing, and you know, there's pornography and gambling websites, and you know, I don't know what else, guns or violence.
Yeah.
And so, what do you have here at school while the students are here? What kind of protections do you have in regards to filters or firewalls and stuff like that?
So, in school, we have two step protection. The mm-hmm. first step or the first layer is the firewall. With the firewall, we protect our network. Basically, any incoming traffic is monitored, checked by our firewall. And all the same thing, any outgoing traffic is also monitored, checked, and then allowed to the internet.
All right, so that first line of defense, the firewall, kind of protects like hackers from coming in.
Exactly.
Getting our students' personal data or yep. getting our personal data.
Yes.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, and also the our firewall appliance also gives us some of the, like, we can specific blocks. Like mm-hmm. specific, we can block specific applications like VPNs, like for example, for students, or even specific websites.
Yeah.
And the second line of defense is the content filtering.
Yeah.
So we use one of the best cloud-based security appliance called GoGuardian. Mm-hmm. And GoGuardian is specifically designed for K-12 schools. And basically, what it does is it filters whatever the incoming, outgoing traffic, and according to set rules, it allows that traffic.
Right.
So basically, in our case, we have chosen the like the pornography, adult content, violence, drug, gambling, and we selected those categories to be blocked. And the system, the GoGuardian itself, automatically sorts out any websites that match to that our categories that were blocked, and automatically blocks that traffic.
Yeah.
So, for example, if a student tries to open any website or search something, GoGuardian kicks in and then blocks the traffic.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I've really appreciated that. You know, we had the child safeguarding and protection team has been talking a lot about this, about, you know, what do we do, and so not only does the GoGuardian block it, you know, but they also have we also get reports on what websites students are visiting, and you know, what are some of the patterns with the traffic, right?
Exactly. GoGuardian gives you on the dashboard some of the statistical information as well. Like, basically, you can see, like, the trends among the students, among the grades, each grade, or among the individual students,
mm-hmm.
what they are doing during the class or during their off times, like at home. So basically, you can get some insight how the students are using the internet.
Now, that's only with a school-issued device, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. As a school, we are obliged to keep the devices secure. If we are providing the device, right. Device should be protected, content filtered. And currently, from grade 3 to grade 8, we provide Chromebooks.
Yeah.
And all those Chromebooks have GoGuardian client installed.
All right. So the GoGuardian is not on their personal devices?
No, definitely no. I think it's the privacy issue and with the parents. And mm-hmm. personal device is a personal device.
Yeah.
And I think even if it's a student, if it's a minor, still their privacy should be respected and protected.
Yeah. And some of that is just old-fashioned monitoring, you know,
yeah.
looking at what the child is doing in your classroom, right?
So, yes.
I see. Okay. And then I know that the GoGuardian also has the Mavis Beacon, you know, so that's a software that could, if you see any language around suicide or self-harm, that gives a, you know, like a warning, and the counselors have access to
Yes, there's a beacon module in the Go Guardian, and basically, as you said, it monitors the specific words or specific search or content, and then alerts the counselor if there's a self-harm situation or some kind of or related to this, and then counselors can take initiative to prevent this kind of self-harm situation.
So in getting back to the Go Guardian reports, I'm going to make a guess on what the most popular website students visit, and I would say number one is probably YouTube.
Yes, YouTube. Like right away on the dashboard, you can see like it's like on top. Google stands like a little bit higher, but the Google is because of the Gmail, because it's like a Chrome browser.
Yeah.
And it's always open.
You get searches.
Yeah, searches. That's why Google is a little bit higher. But the YouTube is the second most like. But time-wise, YouTube is definitely top one.
Yeah.
The time spent on the website, if you look at it, YouTube is has like higher. But again, YouTube, Google search, and those are also controlled by us because we are a Google school. We are subscribed to Google Workspace Education Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, we can control the YouTube content, the moderate YouTube content. So basically, we can switch on all the Chromebooks.
Right.
And also, we can all the Chromebooks are set to be safe search. And basically, the device itself has also, from the operating system, has a defense mechanism to protect the kids.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking about our families, our parents, and do you have any advice for them about home security systems in regards to filters or any advice for the parents in dealing with their children at home on their personal devices? My technique is to take the phone away from them and I lock it in the school office when I get them sick of watching it. But, you know, we have little rules like keep your phone out of your bedroom, right?
Yes. Yeah, with the kids, it's always like with the children, it's like especially these days, it's so difficult, especially they are like from the young ages. They are getting so much used to their devices, like even like 2 years old, 3 years old, they know how to use iPad or even phone. Can you imagine like they can like YouTube or like games playing? So definitely it's becoming like a real challenge for parents to keep their, protect their children from harmful content from the internet. Not only harmful content, but also the screen time.
Yeah.
Becoming like a health issue, like the eyesight getting better, bad, all the like psychology because of too much spending on the internet. So I think the number one is definitely talking to kids, like explaining the harmful parts of the internet, like explain, educate, but kids will be kids. And then we have the, what do you call the tools?
Yeah.
I would say like for family, definitely I would recommend number one thing is the, to change their DNS from their router.
Mm-hmm.
So right now there's like several free DNS services that automatically filters the adult content for you. So basically...
What is a DNS again?
So DNS is basically the address book of internet.
Ah,
so
yeah.
DNS server. So basically if someone tries to open a website, that request goes to the DNS server first, and then DNS server basically tells all that which server to go, which IP address to go, and basically you can see it as like address book.
So I could get a DNS system that say, okay, I want to block, you know, like the most popular pornographic website is Pornhub.
Yep.
And with two teenage sons in the house, that's something I definitely would like to have in, right?
Yep, definitely. So basically how DNS works, DNS filtering those free services, they already have the categories, adult content categories, pre-configured for you. You don't need to like block web, like each website individually. So basically, on some of them, it's already blocked. You don't need to customize it, read it to go. All you need to do is type their DNS addresses onto your router, and that's it. The rest is automatically
What's
blocked.
What's the software called?
It's not the software. It's basically IP address. Mm-hmm. So on the router, you just log into your router. By default, your router gets the DNS from the local provider. Your internet provider gives you whatever DNS they are using. Instead, basically on the router setting, you just show the DNS services IP address. And the all requests that are outgoing from your router will go to that DNS first. And then that DNS basically is going to look, okay, this website is adult content. It's going to get blocked. And that request will bounce back.
Can you put a link on the webpage for this podcast?
Yes, definitely, definitely. Yeah. So I would definitely recommend one of the good ones is OpenDNS. It has Family Shield and Family Home options. Both of them are free. And then there's another good one, Yandex Family DNS. That one is also like pre-configured. All you need to do is type this DNS address into your router, and that's it. Mm-hmm. It automatically blocks adult content.
Okay.
And then, of course, the individual devices, screen time, filtering, monitoring. In these cases, I would recommend some of the client softwares that's going to be installed on the your child's device.
Yeah.
So basically, what happens? You install a device. Basically, so most of the services are subscription-based. You pay some kind of fee each month. And then they give you access to their platform.
Yeah.
And you install their software onto your child's notebook, iPhone, and or iPad. And that from that client software, you can control their screen time, their what they can see, which application they can download, or what kind of website they can see. And not only that, you can also see where they, because most of the phones have the geolocation.
Yeah.
And also you can see where your child is like at any given time.
Yeah.
So one of the recommendations for this one, the Norton family is pretty good. So basically you open an account and then it gives you options. Like they have several different clients for Chromebook, for iPad, or for MacBook or PC. And you download that software to your child's device.
Yeah.
And that's it. The rest you can set up from the online dashboard from your account.
Yeah.
And another good one is Custadio. Yeah, Custadio. That one is pretty good. And then another one I can recommend is Kaspersky Safe Kids. That one is also pretty good. They have the same, what do you call the working process?
Yeah.
Basically, they have their client. You install their client on the your child's device, and you control from the cloud, from the account.
Yeah.
And those are pretty good tools to help. Still, again, as I said, the number one is explain the children, yeah, like the harmfulness. And not only that, it's also, I think it's from young age, it's really important to explain how to use the internet.
Yeah.
Like the basic, like how to share personal information or with whom to share the personal information or the photos or even the just the language in the messaging apps.
Oh, yeah.
You know? The internet keeps everything.
Yeah.
It saves, even though you say it's deleted.
Yeah.
In somewhere, in some servers, still it might keep another copy.
Mm.
And at some point it might get come back to haunt you. Like if it's something improper or something, like what's happening right now. Like some person typed an email or shared a photo. And it, if it gets public,
oh,
it's
yeah,
a reputation yeah, issue as well. I think that's why it's like really important to explain to kids how to use the internet.
Yeah.
How to be like digital citizenship. That's why in our school we have a, what do you call the digital citizenship classes, like in elementary, like our tech coaches explain the harmful content part of the internet as well and how to be use the internet.
Yeah.
And exactly.
Yeah, and I'm always talking with students, and a lot of our teachers are in our PSEL classes, just about, you know, well-being and being healthy. And
when you're on the phone or you're on a screen all day. That's not healthy.
Yes,
so finding
definitely.
Ways to connect with others, to be active. You know, our co-curricular program, you know, with basketball. I'm the basketball coach. I know that it's so good for young people to be off their screens for a significant amount of time, exercising, working with the other students, you know, whether it's drama or Model United Nations or basketball, whatever it is, you know, it's so good for kids. And that's something that, you know, because they eventually have to get the self-discipline to be able to get things done.
Exactly. Yeah. Just limiting or taking away the device doesn't work. You need to give them alternatives. As you said, like there should be some kind of like activity or some kind of replacement process or replacement leisure for kids to replace the device, what they are getting from the device. But just like taking away, I think at any point it's not going to work. But it's like still, kids will be kids, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So your job here at the school, you know, number one is internet and making sure you have a good connection because it's so vital to our education program. But also all of the hardware here, you know, like we have a lot of devices and we have a lot of things. So can you kind of talk about some of the things, you know, some of the major aspects of your job as the technology director and some of the things you do here?
Yes, yes, of course. So as you said, my number one role is maintain the IT infrastructure.
Yeah.
Make sure that it's ready, functioning, and operational. So we have, as you said, we have over like 400 student devices, over 100 teacher devices, and also like supplementary devices, I would say another 100.
Mm-hmm.
And just the server and the network infrastructure is, I would say, I would like over 100 pieces. And of course, my job is make sure that those are all functioning. Basically keep them in a good condition so that they can perform at their best. So equipment, you know, like you never know with the equipment. Even though everything is set up, at some point they're going to break.
Right.
Yeah. And one of my job is also plan ahead. So create like 3-year plan or 4-year plan for strategic replacement of those devices. Also implement the new technology as well, because I would say like 10 years ago the in-house servers were like must, but this is not anymore.
Right.
That's why we haven't bought any servers like within the last 3-4 years. We are not investing anymore because everything is on the cloud, everything is about mobility. So now we are investing more to the network infrastructure. And besides the network infrastructure, my main job is also help the teachers with the technical part of their education. So sometimes people think, okay, technology, sometimes it's difficult, it might be a hassle. And in my mind, my main job is to make the technology a tool that helps you.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as the technology is a difficult thing, it becomes a hassle. And then basically you are not going to use it. So much investment, so much just going to be wasted. So for that, what I do is always I try to explain, train, and show that technology that we have in our school is to help the teachers.
Yeah.
And not to make their life difficult.
I know. And then you got this, you have the help desk. So you have Ravil in the secondary and Vadim in elementary. So I just imagine how many people do you guys see a day coming in between students and employees?
Yeah, that's why our doors are always open. We don't like say like as soon as you have a problem, just call us and we are there. I would say at any given time, in every, like sometimes we have like a high peak times, sometimes low times, but on average we'll get at least, Revil will get at least 20-30 calls or requests. And it's all kind of requests. Sometimes it's technical issue, or sometimes they just want to borrow extra device, charger,
yeah,
or they need help with the projector, Wi-Fi connection. So daily stuff.
Yeah.
And then we have, what do you call the, some of the big items that we usually like plan ahead, like helping with the scheduling.
Yeah.
Helping with the signups, helping with the reporting. Even though it's most of those parts fall on the principal and assistant principals, but the tech part, we are always there to help them so that the process is smooth and easy for teachers and principals.
Well, I think about all of the software that we've brought in to run the school, basically. So you have iSAMS is our administrative database,
yep,
with all the student and family information.
Yep.
You have Toddle,
Toddle,
which is a communication piece in the elementary. And
yeah, it's LMS, learning management,
yeah,
system. And then also we have the ManageBack,
yeah,
secondary LMS system. LMS is a learning management system. Also, we have a lot of like supporting applications like Seesaw, Newzella, IXL, Padlet, and then we are forgetting our main platform, Google.
That's right.
Google is like the core of everything.
Yeah.
It's our authentication, it's our file server, it's our word processing, it's our spreadsheet, it's our signups, forms, and Google was great. Google is great. Like, I can't imagine right now, like, without Google, how could we, like, do all these processes.
Oh, I know. I just think about, what did we used to do before we could share a document and all work on it together? I can't even remember what we did. Did we send it around? Did people write on it? Like, what did we do? I can't even remember a day.
Yeah, yeah. The sharing basically came available with the cloud computing, basically,
yeah,
with the cloud. Before, it used to be you share a file, there will be one version, and then there's another version, and then there's the third version, and then you compare with the notes and everything.
All right, Hoji, I got one more question for you. Just one more topic would be this, this idea of data privacy. And I know that we belong to the Central and Eastern European Schools Association. And in Europe, there's a big push for GDPR. And can you just give us a little brief summary of what is GDPR and why is it important for the schools in Europe?
Yeah. GDPR is a European regulation introduced, I think, in 2018 or 17. I can't exactly remember. So basically, it's a data privacy protocol to protect European citizens. And mostly, it is intended to protect the citizenships from the big internet companies,
mm-hmm,
so that they're personal data is safe, but it applies to everyone. Anyone who's doing with business with Europe, they have to follow the GDPR rules. And CISA is a European organization, and we are part of CISA as a member who's working with the European organization. We need to follow the GDPR rules, or at least be compliant with the requirements.
Right, so that's all of the information that we collect on our students, from just their basic family information,
yep,
to their test scores to,
yep,
you know, all sorts of things that needs to be
protected.
Okay.
Yes. Number one is like basically the itself, it says data privacy.
Yeah.
And number one requirement, those information should be kept securely, processed securely, and collected only if needed. So basically, we need to collect only information that's relevant to our education or to our school processes.
Yeah.
And also, another big part is sharing, with whom we can share that information. So that regulation outlines those points. And as a school, as a CISA member our processes should be aligned for the GDPR. requirements.
Okay. Thanks, Hoji. That was a really good talk. And thank you for being the first guest. We'll have to have you come back when we have our anniversary, our 50th podcast episode, our 100th podcast episode. We'll have you back. But thanks a lot for taking time.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure. Thank you.